You're listening to the Mens Rea podcast, and this is the story of the Kilkenny City cold cases. Kilkenny is a beautiful little medieval city in the southeast of Ireland, which straddles the River Nore. We call it a city, and it's had its charter for over 400 years, but its population is about 25,000 today. It's a lively place known for pubs and restaurants, and is often the choice of a place to go for hen and stag nights. A large castle sits at one end of the town, and a cathedral with a round tower at the other. In the middle, where the old monastery used to be, is a brewery, the home of Smithwick's. Today, there's a yearly comedy festival, and it's the home of the Kilkenny Design Centre, showcasing modern Irish craftsmanship. In the 80s, there was more of a small-town feel to the place, and there were certainly less people living in and around the city, but it was still fairly busy. Its pubs were busy more with locals than now, and like it so often was, there were familiar faces of regulars in and out all the time. One such pub was O'Gorman's, or the Kilkenny House, on John Street, on the east side of the River Nore. From the looks of it today, it can't have changed very much. It's a traditional pub, an open fire, old Guinness and road signs on the walls, and jerseys from the Kilkenny hurling team framed and hung in pride of place. The closest thing you might get to food is a packet of crisps or peanuts, and there's often live music. It's a welcoming, homey kind of pub. In 1987, one of the regulars to the pub was Anne Smith, but everyone called her Nancy. She was 69 and lived in a little house that was just a few minutes' walk away from the pub, down a little lane and on to Wolfe Tone Street. She'd lived there with her husband, but he had died the year before. And so she was on her own now, accepting her yellow lab. But she was well known in the pub, and she'd spend her evenings there often, in company with friends. She was a quiet woman, but enjoyed chatting with people she knew at the pub and the staff there. She was partial to a rum and blackcurrant, or a whiskey and lemonade. Her trips there helped to ease the loneliness. She missed her husband dearly, and had even taken to sleeping in a chair in her living room rather than in their bed. The pub was a distraction. On the night of the 10th of September 1987, Nancy headed to the pub. It was a Thursday night, and she arrived at around 9 p.m. Anne LaHart was behind the bar. Her dad was the landlord at the time. She loved seeing Nancy come in and described the older woman as, quote, a lady through and through, end quote. Mrs. Smith had a few drinks that night and bought a 10-pack of cigarettes before Thomas LaHart, the publican, drove her the short distance home. It was just going on midnight, and though the house was only 5 minutes away by foot, he often dropped the older lady down the road and saw her to her house. Thomas recalled that Nancy was, quote-unquote, merry as she left. He said goodbye to her and God bless before returning to his own home. There was a commotion on the street shortly after this, with neighbours hearing yelling and banging on windows. A man was spotted outside Nancy's house, going in and out, and when neighbours came out onto the street to look, they saw a figure of a man, who turned away and looked to be trying to hide himself. One neighbour, Geraldine Brennan, heard a familiar male voice yell, quote, "I will fucking get you, let me in," end quote. It was the voice of John Joe Malone, a 24-year-old man who was known around the town. And then all went quiet. But at 3:45, a passerby noticed smoke coming from Nancy Smith's house. By 5:00, a man driving by stopped when he saw flames coming from inside the house. The fire services were called. Ciarán Cormacan was the assistant chief fire officer at the time. He arrived after the blaze had been put out. The fire had mainly been confined to the sitting room, and the couch seemed to have gotten the worst of it. On the living room floor lay Mrs. Smith and her poor old dog. At the back of the house, he spotted a wooden ladder, which was up against the back wall. Later, he would say that something about what he saw didn't sit right with him, and so he decided to preserve the scene. Gardaí were brought in to investigate, but the first order of business was to establish Mrs. Smith's cause of death. Her body was brought to hospital, where Professor John Harbison performed her autopsy. His examination found that she showed no signs of smoke inhalation, and though she did have burns to her body, he concluded that they had happened after her death. Mrs. Smith had died when she was strangled. She had a lot of damage to her throat and neck, and there was grazing to the back of her neck and head. Nancy Smith had died before the fire was lit in her house that night. Statements were taken by the Gardaí from the last people to see Nancy alive, the publican and his daughter. Initially, Anne Lahart was worried that she was somehow responsible, thinking back to selling the woman cigarettes. She thought that maybe they had caused the fire that killed Mrs. Smith, but they hadn't. But this was as far as the investigation went. Nancy Smith had been murdered, but the Gardaí didn't know by whom or why. Time passed. Nancy's family didn't forget what had happened to her, though it seemed as if everyone else had, even the Gardaí. But there was one person in Kilkenny who hadn't forgotten what had happened that night. The man who had killed a vulnerable older person in her own home and then tried to cover it up by setting a fire. In that fire, precious family heirlooms and photographs were lost, to the extent that it's impossible to find a picture of Nancy today. This man had done his best to wipe what he had done and this poor woman from existence. And despite the fact that his crime was amateurish and unplanned, the case was all but forgotten. That is, until when, in 2012, the Serious Crime Review Team came across Nancy Smith's case. They recommended that an appeal for further information be made for the cold case. Crime Call, a program made by Radio Telefish Éireann, which asks the public's help to solve crimes, featured Nancy's story in that year. In response to the appeal, a number of people came forward. They knew who was responsible for Nancy's death. What's more, he'd confessed to them. The Gardaí investigation now ramped up yet again, and in October of 2015, some 28 years after her death, John Joe Malone was arrested for the murder of Nancy Smith. He appeared at a special sitting of the district court on the 16th of that month to be formally charged, and was eventually let out on bail. John Joe, now in his early 50s, went back to Kilkenny, where he was a familiar face in the town. But not because he was friendly with people, though. He was known to be unpredictable. One retired detective from the cold case unit described Malone as intimidating and frightening. Malone's bail was revoked 3 times in the run-up to his trial for contacting and intimidating witnesses who were called for the state against him. The first 2 times, Malone and his legal team appealed the decision to the High Court, and bail was reinstated. The final revocation happened just a week before he was to appear in the Central Criminal Court. He had turned up at the home of one of the witnesses, 81-year-old Eileen Kelly. And so he would attend his trial while in the custody of the state. In March of 2017, John Joe Malone appeared before Mr. Justice Patrick McCarthy and a jury of 7 men and 5 women and pled not guilty to the charges against him. Sean Galan, senior counsel, was prosecuting, and Malone had Coleman Cody, senior counsel, defending, who started off with a motion to dismiss the charges against his client entirely due to the passage of time between the crime and the trial. His argument was that there had been an undue delay in taking the case, infringing upon his client's right to due process. But this, however, was rejected by the court. Professor Mary Cassidy appeared in court to go over the findings of her predecessor, Professor Harbison. She had received the report together with his notes and photographs of the procedure. She described what he had noted and what she saw herself in the pictures. There were pressure marks on Mrs. Smith's neck, as well as pinprick bruising, which often indicated strangulation. On top of that, there was a lot of damage to the woman's neck, around the windpipe, the hyoid bone, and the thyroid gland, and some of the thyroid cartilage was fractured in places. Mrs. Smith's lungs and throat had been clear of soot and smoke, despite the burns to her skin that she had received. In fact, there was no indication from the tissues that Harbison had examined that Mrs. Smith had been alive when the fire was ongoing. She'd been killed before it was set, due to compression of the neck. Professor Cassidy told the court that this may have been with bare hands, or with a ligature, or by placing an arm around Mrs. Smith's neck. Further, she found bruising to Mrs. Smith's head, which she said was consistent with either punches or being struck against a hard surface. The court heard evidence that, like Mrs. Smith, John Joe Malone had been out drinking on the night of the 10th of September 1987. But it was the state's case that, rather than go home when he left at around midnight, he had gone over to Wolf Tone Street and begun harassing Mrs. Smith by banging on her windows and threatening her. Malone had been questioned back in 1987 by the Gardaí and had initially made a statement denying that he had even been at Mrs. Smith's home. This would later change with him admitting to having gone to the house and having an argument with the older woman, but he continued to deny that he had attacked her, hurt her in any fashion, or of having set her house alight. Also heard from a number of people who came forward with stories that John Joe had confessed to committing the murder to them. Malone's own brother, Barney, told the court that sometime in November of 2006, John Joe had turned up at his house with three bottles of cider. While he sat drinking them in his brother's kitchen, John Joe had confessed to him that he'd killed Nancy Smith. With that, Barney had put his brother out of the house, but John Joe had returned about 3 hours later with a knife. John Joe had knocked at the door, and as soon as Barney opened it, his brother had struck out at him. Barney recalled for the court that he hadn't even seen the blade, but that he'd fallen immediately to his knees with the pain. Malone had received a suspended sentence for stabbing his brother. Barney said on the stand that it was his belief that John Joe knew he had made a mistake by telling him what he had done, and that he'd come back to the house that day with an intention to kill him. Anne Walsh, Barney's former wife, explained to the jury how John Joe had confessed to her not once, but three times, and that she'd actually gone to the Gardaí about it 20 years previous to tell them what he'd said. He'd even said to her that he'd set her house on fire, just like he'd done to Nancy Smith. But nothing had come of it, the threat or the report to the Gardaí. Geraldine Brennan also gave evidence, telling the court that she and her parents, who were deceased by the time of the trial, had heard a commotion in the street that night and had seen John Joe banging on the windows and shouting for Nancy to let him in or he'd kill her. Billy Patterson, a minister with an evangelical Presbyterian church, also said that John Joe had confessed to him and other members of a Bible study group that he ran. He told the court that Malone had once told him he was considering becoming a Christian. When Mr. Peterson asked what would stop him, Malone said only that he'd done something. Patterson pressed him and asked if it had to do with the old woman, and Malone said yes. When Billy asked outright, "Did you do it?" Malone again said yes. Jude Curran said that some months after the death of Mrs. Smith, Malone had come by his house. They'd met through the Bible study group. Jude had been studying his Bible when Malone arrived, and when they spoke, Malone had asked him if he thought God would forgive someone for committing murder. That wasn't the end of it, however. A few months after that, Malone had called back to the house and commented that he couldn't figure out how forensics had it that Mrs. Smith had been strangled. Then he told Jude that he had argued with Nancy, that he'd pushed her and she'd fell, banging her head off a stone. Malone told him that he'd brought the woman inside to sit her down, where she'd died. It was then that he'd lit the fire. Eileen Kelly, whose house Malone had turned up outside only weeks before, shouting and roaring, gave her evidence to the court as well. She said that after Nancy was killed, she'd actually confronted Malone. He'd told her that they'd had an argument and that Nancy had accused Mr. Malone's brother of stealing from her in a pub. Malone said he'd gotten mad at that and had shoved Nancy into the door and grabbed her neck. So the story that he told Eileen Kelly was that it had all been an accident. The only indication of what might have motivated John Joe to call around to Mrs. Smith's house that night was some sort of argument over a pigeon racing trophy that Mr. Smith had won in the years prior to his death. In court, there was no motive offered. In closing, Mr. Golan for the state went through the witness testimony he had presented. A number of people had heard Malone confess to the murder of Mrs. Smith, and her neighbours pushed Malone on the road the night she was killed and the fire was set. Coleman Cody, however, said that this was all rubbish. His client had known Nancy and had been at her home that night, yes, but he hadn't hurt her, let alone kill her, and he had most certainly not set her house on fire. He pointed out that these supposed confessions that the jury had just heard were late to be reported. None of what they'd heard during the trial had been put in an official statement until 2012. It was his assertion that Gardaí had fixated on John Joe back in 1987, and he asked the jury to consider what a big coincidence it was that in 2012, after a renewed appeal, the people who came forward named Malone as the person who had killed Mrs. Smith. The Gardaí could find no physical evidence to bring charges against his client, and so witness evidence was what they would have to rely on to build their case. Cody asked the jury to consider how much they could truly rely on the statements made by those witnesses about events 30 years previously, which, if true, they had allowed to go unreported for so long. He strongly implied that these people hadn't witnessed anything like what they were now swearing to, though he did think it was possible some may now believe that this story was indeed true, so often had they repeated it. Mr. Cody reminded the jury that they were to make their decision about guilt or innocence beyond a reasonable doubt before resting. After a 3-week trial and 3.5 hours of deliberation, the jury unanimously found John Joe Malone guilty of the murder of Nancy Smith 30 years previously. He was later sentenced to life imprisonment while he wept and was comforted by members of his family. Desmond Murphy, Nancy's nephew, speaking on behalf of his family, said, quote, "What happened to Nancy on that night had a major effect on all members of our family," end quote. And he said that, to them, this moment was closure, something they'd given up hope of having. Malone and his legal team immediately lodged notice that they were going to appeal the conviction, and they went before the Court of Appeal in February of 2018. The grounds related, in general, to the delay in laying charges against Mr. Malone, and specifically, in relation to the testimony of Geraldine Brennan at Malone's trial. Mr. Cody, representing the applicant again, said that Ms. Brennan's testimony had differed greatly from the statement she had made to the Gardaí in 1987. Back then, she had told them that she had heard an argument, but didn't mention the threats and so on. Cody also pointed out that Geraldine's parents were in the house that night, and so were also witnesses to the events going on up the street, but both had passed away by the time Malone stood trial. So he had the testimony of one witness who admitted having lied in a previous statement, making very damaging statements about hearing threats against Mrs. Smith, which he argued impacted her credibility. And on top of that, there was an inability to corroborate her story due to the passage of time. Her parents were no longer alive to confirm her story. Sean Galan, again for the Director of Public Prosecutions, explained that Mrs. Brennan hadn't told the Gardaí the truth in 1987 because her father had warned her not to. They didn't want to get involved with Malone, given his reputation in Kilkenny. He'd be likely to turn up at their house next. And so she had lied. And she had admitted lying in front of the jury. But her account, taken together with other witnesses on Wolfe Tone Street that night, and the many confessions that Malone had made, meant that the case built against him was circumstantial, but strong. And the three-judge panel agreed with Galan. Justice Birmingham noted specifically that pinning the appeal on the issue of Geraldine Brennan's testimony completely ignored the fact that there was also confession evidence. Malone, according to the judge, had been going around Kilkenny, quote, left, right and centre, unquote, confessing to the murder. Added to that, the jury had been given detailed instructions in relation to how they should view the evidence before them in light of the delay. The appeal was dismissed. The renewed interest in Nancy Smith's case and the review conducted by the Serious Crime Review Team in the Carlow-Kilkenny region in 2012 brought to Garda attention yet another unsolved murder in Kilkenny City in the 1980s. A similar, yet entirely unconnected, cold case. Marie Tierney, a 34-year-old mother of two, had left her Jenkinstown home on the 21st of October 1984 at about 10:30 at night. She had driven off in the family's Renault 18 and never returned. Earlier that day, the couple had brought their 12 and 13-year-old children to Kilkenny to swim, and they'd returned home in the early evening so that they could watch Glen Row before the kids would go to bed. Her husband, Jim, reported her missing the next day, telling Gardaí that he didn't know where she'd gone the night before. The Renault was found later that day too, with the keys still in the ignition, abandoned in the New Park Fen area of Kilkenny. Jenkinstown, where the family of four lived, is about 12 kilometres or 8 miles north of Kilkenny City, about a 10-minute drive, and New Park Fen is on the outskirts of the city itself. There are more houses there now than there were in the 80s, but there's still a swathe of thick green field, and it's still relatively quiet. The area was searched, but there was no sign of Marie. Nearly exactly 2 months later, on the 21st of December 1984, a farmer was out looking for a swan he had seen hit an electric cable on the Bleach Road. He was out in this rural area trying to find the injured bird. It was only about 3 miles from where Marie's car had been found, just outside the city, but effectively in dense countryside. The man stopped when he spotted something that looked to him, initially, like a discarded mattress. On closer inspection, he found that it was the body of a woman. Marie Tierney had been dumped in a ditch after being strangled to death. Gardaí believed that Mrs. Tierney had been killed elsewhere and her body dumped at the side of the road, but beyond that, there was very little to go on. There were reports of two men acting suspiciously near to or on Bleach Road. They were huddled around an open car boot. But this information led nowhere, and again, the investigation stalled. An inquest into Marie's death was held a year and a half later after it was clear no charges were going to be laid. Medical evidence of cause of death was heard, as well as testimony from Jim Tierney about the day Marie had disappeared. It was, by all accounts, a normal day. He also told the coroner's court that about £200 was missing from the takings of the shop that the two ran together. The couple were happy, but Jim said that Marie had been having some health issues and had been attending a psychiatrist. The Gardaí who had originally worked on Marie's case eventually all retired, and it was only with its quote-unquote rediscovery in 2012 that the new officers became familiar with the file and the evidence in the case. Old typewritten notes were transcribed, as well as statements and photographic evidence and reports. It all had to be looked at once again. But they were in dire need of fresh information. There was a renewed appeal for information relating to the case. RTE late night investigative programme Primetime made a special about the case, and how it had sat unsolved for so long, with Marie and her family waiting on justice that might never come. Witnesses were re-interviewed. A family liaison officer was appointed to act as a go-between for the Gardaí and Marie's family, which included her husband, grown-up children and her siblings. And then there was another appeal for information in November of 2017. The following year, applications were made to the Minister for Justice and Kilkenny County Council to have Marie Tierney's remains exhumed with the consent of her family. This happened in early November of 2018. Gardaí hoped that they would find vital DNA evidence on Mrs. Tierney's remains, and in November of last year, told the press that they believe some of the statements they have taken from witnesses could prove to be strong circumstantial evidence against a person that they have now identified as a suspect. Marie's siblings, Breida Fay and John Burke, have appealed for her killer to come forward in the press, saying, quote, "You know who you are, and we're asking you to please come forward," end quote. There was further hope of a break in the case when, in December of last year, a new potential witness came forward to Gardaí after the renewed appeal and the press coverage of the exhumation the month before. Since December, however, there has been no news of movement in the case. Over 500 lines of inquiry have been opened to date, and over 200 witness statements have been taken in relation to the case. Gardaí have appealed for anyone that may have been in the New Park Fen area on the 21st of October 1984 to come forward if they, for some reason, have not already done so. For such a small, picturesque place, it's a bit startling to find two such similar murders, dating from around the same time, that were unsolved for so long, although they are obviously completely unconnected. I'm hopeful that there will be movement on Marie Tierney's case in the coming year, with the impression that the Gardaí were giving the press late last year. Closure is a cold comfort, but at least it's something for people who have suffered such a terrible loss. Thank you for listening to Mens Rea, a true crime podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mens Rea Pod, or you can send an email to mensreapod@gmail.com. This podcast is made possible in part from generous donations by supporters on Patreon. Please do check it out at patreon.com/mensreapod. Our theme music is Quinn's Song, The Dance Begins by Kevin MacLeod. Additional music is by Juanita Meisel and Kevin MacLeod. This episode was researched and written by me, your host, Sinead. All sources for today's episode can be found in the show notes or on our website, www.mensreapod.com. And so, till next time, don't do anything I wouldn't do.